welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This show is sponsored by ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. I am G.R. Mobley. This is an educational grassroots program focused on uniting and leading in restoring the Republic and placing the federal government back into the scope and framework of the Constitution once again. And welcome back. And it's now or never, as you know. So as we kind of have been moving forward, we're going to be covering a few different, I'll just say, topics that are really hard for people to get their arms around. We just kind of covered what we call the scale of liberty. And one of the things that I think is imperative that I kind of do a go back, or I try to include this additional perspective for you. The scale of liberty isn't as much linear as it is circular. And what I mean by that is it's not circular as in a loop where you can go from one end and keep going all the way around and come up at the other end. The energy we're talking about, political energy, doesn't necessarily work that way. It swings back and forth. And so if you really look at liberty as, you know, and the scale of liberty as more of a pendulum, and I don't mean a pendulum that only swings back and forth. I mean, a lot of people have seen, you know, those five steel balls that bounce back and forth. You grab one and it sends the other ball on the opposite end out and it just goes back and forth. That's a linear pendulum. I'm sorry. And so, you know, I do it to myself. All of these words are tongue twisters, and I'm not the best in wrestling with words. So anyway, as you know, the names are bad, is enough of that. And so anyway, one of the things that I'm trying to help you visualize is if you had a point that was suspended where you have a ball that could swing back and forth. Now, technically, you could allow that ball to really swing kind of like a tetherball in a circle, you know, almost horizontally around. But what we believe, because political motion actually, you know, there are movements, but it does go back and forth. And it goes from one type of control to anarchy, one type of a controlled anarchy. And so just imagine that at the very top where this point, this, you know, cable or whatever's holding the ball that's swinging back and forth is on like a bearing that can spin 360 degrees. So in other words, the ball does go back and forth linear wise, but it can change its course to where instead of going from 12 to 6, 12 to 6, 12 to 6, it can go to 1 to 7, 1 to 7. And it can keep on spinning around to where it is then going backwards from 6 to 12, 6 to 12. And so, and then it can spin all the way back around the 360 to 12 to 6. So why am I explaining this? Because when we look at the way politics is today, they have twisted our politics from being constitutional and unconstitutional, full liberty or not, to a new option, or I should say their preferred form of option of liberal control to conservative control. And as it swings back and forth, it is literally swinging back and forth into the hands of, and you got to understand that the anarchy side, you'll always see anarchy on one of the sides where things get crazy and there's just a lack of control. And the reason you will see anarchy, because anarchy is a tool for the left to seize control on that side of the spectrum. So in other words, they create a problem and they get out there. And as while the ball is on their side, they try to create a law like healthcare. And then they say, okay, we're going to create a law. Everybody deserves healthcare. You do realize that giving everybody healthcare is like giving everybody tomatoes. You just crash the tomato market by doing so. And so you crash the healthcare market. And now the government's involved in picking. And the reason why costs keep going up on all of these things is because they regulate it for the benefit of profits of others. And the more they reduced it, you know, they knew the doctors were going to get out of this system. They knew that there would be a shortage of good qualified people over time, because they knew the people, you know, the people that wanted the money to do this, or the people that spent all of the time. You gotta understand, Marx's paradigm was that a janitor's labor is equal to a brain surgeon's labor. There is no difference in what they contribute. If you read Marxism and the Marx Manifesto, he basically says that, you know, the bourgeoisie and these, you know, these elitists, that's what we'll call them today, you know, they create this paradigm that some labor is worth more than others, when actually we all contribute. So he believes everything is equal, and that's not true. So in other words, a kid getting out of school should have a living wage and live the same quality of life that a surgeon should, who has invested many years in learning and what it takes to be able to do the very specific skills that he's obtained to do. And so this is crazy. This is taking, you know, the opportunities, you know, when I look at, and I, you know, I can understand when I listen to myself, you know, and I catch myself and I'm trying to make this wrestling of these ideas, I understand I probably sound kind of weird and kind of, you know, crazy. But God's plan was, and if we look at the parable of the tent, was it the tenants? What was it? Talents. The talents that these three men buried. You know, actually one man buried, and the other man, you know, went out and, you know, multiplied his talents, you know, tenfold or whatever it was. And forgive me for not knowing the details, but I just want to use this metaphor and this parable, that the person that does the most in this life and trying to do the most and being as productive as they can. And I also believe that it's, you know, there's a direct association to the blessings of how we bless others, how we treat others. You know, those people who, you know, become rich and take advantage and, you know, are, you know, hardcore players that, you know, just they have a scorched earth mentality. They're just jerks, you know. They have their comeuppance. I truly believe that we all will, you know, have the time to account for what we do in this life. And if you've buried the talents, because clearly God's given all of us talents. Some of us can speak better than others. I mean, that's why there's a lot of people that speak better than me, or communicate and articulate better. There are those who have, you know, an array of different talents. To some, they've obtained many and developed many more. Those people, the Bible says that they're blessed for what they're doing, especially when they use these things for his work and for his good. But those who do these things for themselves, you know, they may receive blessings or they may not. And as we look at it, I would like to think that, you know, even though they may not have killed anybody or what have you, you know, we all get our just rewards. And as a matter of fact, when it really comes down to it, I believe we're going to be the judges, because really, everybody that I know, they're always the worst judging themselves. When they look at what they've done and how they could have done better, they could have done this. Many a times when they do something wrong to others or what have you, they try to justify that. But when you get them into a point of honesty, when they're really looking at, you know, that was just absolutely wrong, I shouldn't have done that. Now, we've obtained the paradigm in our society to admit nothing, deny everything, always have a counter accusation, and make sure that you hold other people accountable, but do everything you can not to be held accountable. That sounds like our politics, doesn't it? So anyway, I'm trying to talk about this pendulum, and the bottom line is, as we look at this pendulum moving back and forth, and as we look at, you know, what we can do and how much we can do, we all have the ability to make an effect in moving that pendulum to start swinging towards liberty. And the way we do that is it takes one person to start, And then it takes another person. If you look at the history of mankind, when, you know, power becomes so corrupt and so oppressive, like, you know, the English Empire, the Roman Empire, the Egyptian Empire, when they've gotten so oppressive and just evil, not caring, this is where the empires are today on this earth. The leaders, the conglomerates, the Chinese Communist Parties and all these other people that are, you know, the players, the influencers in control. There's lots of, I'll call them monkeys on a string, dancing around trying to keep people entertained and or trying to keep people distracted. But the few people that are actually doing all of this, they've been the ones influencing that motion of the pendulum to go sideways just a little bit. So taking it a little off course, a little more off course, to where we're now going from 3 o'clock to 9 o'clock, east to west type of direction. And so we're perpendicular from liberty, to where everything the government is doing is despotic. Everything that they're doing is out of line with the Constitution. We've completely lost the concepts. What we can do, what you can do, and what we all can do, and we all can start developing the talents, we can start developing the efficacy of the efficiency in production, the efficiency in being able to do more, to produce more, and be, you know, producing better quality and more altogether. As a matter of fact, I just recently heard, and forgive me for going down this rat hole, I just recently heard that they have done studies where they have given, they've divided a class, and they've given one side of the class a responsibility to build the best product, bar none, of a, like a pottery bowl or pottery. Doing the pottery product that they do has to be the top quality. And then they gave the other half of the class, you know, their response, their job was to make as much pottery as possible. And so, you know, whether it be on a spin wheel or what have you, in a very specific functionalities. And I guess, you know, the more you go out and the more you do this, the more you'll find that those who are doing more do better. And we'll get into that when we come back, because it's an important analogy as to, you know, this pendulum and getting out and doing things, to how we can affect this pendulum in its motion from going east to west, to get it back to north and south, so that it's swinging towards liberty. We'll be right back after this promo. Thank you so much.
If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with republic review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as republic review. Please read my argument for republic review, as well as my description of the Republic Review model, on reclaimingtherepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how Republic Review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you.
Friends, if you have any questions or comments, we have our 24-hour comment line at 425-270-5416. Okay, so anyway, in this study that they did, they realized that as they went out, what, you know, and I don't know the details of whether it was just a spin wheel type of pottery class or what, or, you know, what to do in developing the best pottery, best quality pot, but it was always consistent that the side of the class that did more. Because what they ended up doing by working, you know, they actually learned what their processes were, where their problems were, and they got better and better at building pots. The class that worked in theory and just said, well, we'll try this, and then we'll try this, and we'll try this, you know, and as they went, you know, in this theory of how and worked you know, with engineering and formulas, or the details, I have no idea the depth. But bottom line, the side that did quantity instead of focused on quality always made better pots. So the point that I'm trying to make is that, do you know people that are constantly trying to do better and so forth? I mean, I work with people that want to have things perfect. They expect a perfect world. I understand a lot of people that I work with are apprehensive in actually getting out and doing something because they want to get it right the first time. You know, folks, some of the best lessons we learn are by mistakes. And we'll be talking about, and I don't think none of these things are mistakes. Actually, they're not mistakes. They're just learning opportunities. As a matter of fact, many times, whatever it is you do, it's a win either way. And I can get into some of this into detail, but what we really need to cover is some of the content that I need to cover. But my point is this, that don't wait. Walk with faith. And watch how well you are blessed. Act with faith. I mean, take it to the Lord and say, Lord, I'm going to go do this. Be with me. Guide me. Help me. Help me in these things. And I'm here to tell you, folks, you'll be surprised. You'll be surprised. I mean, there's points in time where you're going to go, is this good or bad? And 9 times out of 10, we're quick to think bad. But no, you'd be surprised. And I'll give you one case in point. Let's say you walk into, because I tell many people all the time, to go into a Republican Central Committee meeting in your county. Now, I haven't even had a chance to talk to anybody who has done this recently. And I know in 2 cases it's being done. And I can say in Wyoming and Virginia, those are the 2 states. And I haven't talked to anybody regarding this yet. So what I want to do is I want to tell you that I can tell you that if you go in, and this is the best way to do this, take the 3 petitions we have, the one that gets rid of Biden, the one that repels the invasion, and the one that gets us out of the UN. I think it's 1, 3, 2 in that order. The second one is the UN one. But nevertheless, you take those in, you take in a signature sheet and so forth. And let's say you've got a hardcore progressive in charge of that meeting. I am here to tell you that I don't know per se, you know how hardcore progressive. I mean, it could be a hardcore communist, and I mean, so that they are anti-constitution completely. But the question is, how many people in that room are actually lovers of the Constitution? And if you've ever been involved at the party, they don't talk about the Constitution. They talk about what they need to do, and they keep you focused on door knocking and sign waving and envelope stuffing and we got to do this and we got to do this. But they never teach you about the Constitution. They never explain what we need to do, why we need to do it. They go by what the party needs to do. And they tell people, this is so important and we really appreciate it. And you're getting these Republicans in. Why is it that every state that is dominated by Republicans has the exact same problems with progressives? In other words, their state legislature is just as left as anybody. I mean, more than you'd even think. So, folks, the fact of the matter is, regardless of how corrupt or how left that person is, 9 times out of 10, there is a good likelihood that on the record, they would be saying things like getting rid of Biden would be the best thing for America. Now, they may want a Trump back in office. They may want, somebody that has been anointed to be in control of the globalist agenda for the president and in the other positions. Maybe they're that much in the know. Maybe they're not. Either way, there are people in that room that have committed themselves to contributing to changing the course of our nation. And many of them are completely clueless to, what they're doing and how they're being used as tools in maintaining the status quo and all of the problems that the party is bestowing upon us. So when you go in there and you just walk in, and you walk in right before the meeting starts, and the chair, you know, and everybody, you know, here's the chair, ask you, hey, you know, welcome to the meeting. How can we help you? And you say, oh, well, if I'm just looking to see if I can get a couple of minutes, just a couple of minutes right before your meeting, so that I can present a strategy that our organization we've just created is basically doing in using First Amendment petitions to hold government accountable so that we can get better constitutional supporting candidates into office and challenge these folks, either convert them to become supporting the Constitution, or we'll challenge them in the next election to replace them. And we've got First Amendment petition. And basically, at this point in time, you're already giving your spiel. And at this point in time, you're saying, we've already got three petitions, one to remove Biden, one to repel the invasion, and another one to get the UN out of the United States and get our involvement out of the UN permanently. And everybody in that room would align with at least a few of those points. And so you'll find that because they're not hardcore, they all look at the same problems because they're average Americans. They don't know what the script is. And so when they hear that the chair's response, it will tweak them one way or the other. Now, all you've got to do is say, we've got these petitions. We'd like to, you know, pass them around and get signatures, if that's okay with you. Yeah, sure. Absolutely. Go ahead. And if they let that happen, then great. There's no resistance. There's no red flags. But if the chair actually says, no, we don't do that. We don't. We use this meeting for, you know, Republican business only. And that's it. Go, I'm sorry. I thought that we could, you know, between our organization and the Republican Party, I thought we could, you know, find common ground on the Constitution and work together. But if that's not the case, then we're sorry for intruding. I am going to tell you. But what you can do is you can kind of sit around, because those meetings are open for the public, and you can wait for people to come to you and give them your business card and say, yeah, you can help us here. And then they'll actually sign the petitions as you sit there. Chances are they won't kick you out. They'll just say that they're not going to let you do that. So you just sit around and stay. But either way, it's a win. Either way, you see how you do that. Both ways, you actually walk away winning. There are all sorts of scenarios that you can create that either way you will win. And so that's just one of them. But we need to be able to just have a little faith and walk in. And actually, the best way to approach this, the best way to approach all of these types of things is, you know, with a little humility, a little honesty, sincerity, and, you know, and an olive branch to say, you know, I'm really wanting to work with you guys on common ground. And I think the Constitution is common ground for everybody. Every U.S. citizen has a responsibility to support and defend the Constitution against enemies, foreign and domestic. You know, and if they challenge that, you go, well, you know, everybody is supposed to be a member of the militia, right? Yeah, well, that's what the militia is supposed to do. So aren't we, you know, kind of waiting, we're the reserves to be called up if necessary to support the Constitution? You know, because eventually they'll realize that they took a losing position and they will go, yeah, you know, I see your point. And that's all they'll probably say if they don't want to agree. I see your point. Yeah, there are people that are really good at politics, and they understand, and they don't concede, and what they do is they spin or what have you. But I'm telling you, folks, as good as those people may be, majority of the people in the room that hear and witness this type of interplay, they know, they understand what's going on. They're not stupid. This is why they decided to get involved. And when they recognize the fact that they're involved in something that, you know, hey, this is not what I signed up for, you've actually opened up the door. And so one of the things you do also, don't ever forget that when you're passing out this petition or these petitions for signatures, say, we'd love to have your signature. And if you've got time, we would love to have your help in gathering more signatures. Or if you want to write petitions, there's a few ways you can help. So just let us know, because we need as much help as we can. But we're going to win this war, and we need your help to do it. And the people will hear that. And they're going, you know, I really feel good about signing these petitions. This is something that is far more effective than what I think I'm doing here in the party. And you'll probably find that a lot of people will either, you know, maintain their role in the party and get involved in your organization. And if that, it's a win. It's a double win, because if they stay in the party, then they can continue to convert other people. If they get out of the party, then they could actually, if you're a part of the Constitution Party, Independent American Party, or some other constitutionally oriented party, then you could bring people into that party as well. But that's one of the reasons why you create this organization, whether it's Citizens for Liberty, you know, Wyoming Constitutionalists, it doesn't matter what you name it. Like I said, my preference would be at the county level, you refer to the county name and the unorganized militia, because that is technically what you're doing, and that is precisely what we need to teach people, that we're all responsible to be a part of that unorganized militia in being vigilant citizens in holding government accountable. So anyway, two things I don't want to skip over is that we've got this video, the new video is still out there on YouTube, and what I'm really trying to push is make sure you subscribe. Make sure you subscribe to the Reclaiming the Republic channel on YouTube. I know that there's lots of people that ask, you know, sign up for the emails and all of that stuff. I know you don't want more emails, but I do know that you would like to know when we drop the next one, because part three is going to start, you know, connecting. We're getting close to finishing connecting all the dots. So anyway, we'll be right back after this promo.
Folks, I'm constantly providing you with case after case and giving you both the empirical information as well as irrefutable academic evidence that the federal government is operating well outside the bounds of the Constitution. In measuring outlays, the federal government is spending over 80% of your tax dollars on unconstitutional government. This is why we don't need a balanced budget amendment. We just need to enforce the Constitution. So what is it going to take for you to take a stand in getting the federal government back into the framework of the Constitution? To be clear, the solution is simple and does not require much work on any one individual, especially if everyone contributed to the effort. We only ask that you make a commitment today to contributing however you can and make the difference necessary for our posterity's sake. Send me an email at info@reclaimingtherepublic.org. And let me know how you'd like to help so we can help you save our republic.
Don't forget, you can call our 24-hour comment line to ask a question or to speak on any topic. Dial 425-270-5416.
Okay, so in addition to subscribing to the YouTube channel, I can't forget that we are going to start having a nationwide, or I should say organizations nationwide, are going to start connecting on this national call that we're doing. And we'll be I think we're doing it on Tuesdays, and we'll be doing it, you know what, I'll have to let you know. It'll be either Tuesday or Wednesday, but it will be from 8 o'clock Eastern and 5 o'clock Western time, and it'll be for 1 hour. And that way, we'll be able to sit down and kind of cover, and it'll be kind of difficult, but we really want to keep it to 1 hour. And what I'm hoping is that we can develop the time for people to either create a good, concise overview of what you've done and what you're doing and what you need help with, and or what have you, the questions you have and so forth, so that we can kind of cover them on a point by point. Because some of the things that we need to talk about is how to do things. You know, there's not any domain knowledge on this. As a matter of fact, technically, I know that, you know, we were talking about theory and these pots and everything else. This may be theoretical, but it's actually been applied. If you understand how long the First Amendment petitions and the petitioning of government is, and I'm going to get this article done, and so I've got so many irons in the fire. I'll get the article done so you can read the historical context as well as you know, how and why. I mean, what Martin Luther did was using petitions and educating the people and getting them engaged and invigorated. We're doing the same thing. The framers did the exact same thing when it was a call to arms, per se, you know, for the Revolutionary War. That's how they did it. It all started with petitions. Well, we shouldn't even be thinking about a convention of states or even picking up arms until we start petitioning and work through the process to prove whether these folks are going to do the job or not. And that's some of the things we're learning. We're learning this in Wyoming, in Campbell County. We're seeing that, you know, county commissioners are going, huh, what do we have to, are we responsible for First Amendment petitions? Wait till we start hitting state legislators. Wait till you actually walk in and you stop protesting, you stop doing rallies, and you actually go in and you say, you're accountable to us, and we're telling what you have to do. And if you don't, we will be back, and we will hold you accountable. The problem is that we've never put it into that context to say, we demand that you defend this record, and you actually can create this beautiful record of all the things you've petitioned them and say, how does this person defend themselves, this, 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 and this? And, you know, technically, by the Constitution, they are ineligible to be in office. Prove me wrong. Who's that Louder by Crowder or whatever, you know, his little cup of coffee? I'd love to see him do some of this stuff. Prove me wrong. And so anyway, what we want to do is we want to get into natural law. And actually, when I say natural law, that's just the short title. And that's the progressive title. It's actually the laws of nature and nature's God. And so the natural law, most people understand that natural law was the foundation of Western society. And it was evolutionary, or I should say it was in tandem in the evolution of enlightenment from the beginning of Western society. The concept of natural law is central to the Western tradition of thought about morality, politics, and law. Although the Western tradition is not united around a single theoretical account of natural law, its principal architects and leading spokesmen, from Aristotle to Thomas Aquinas to Abraham Lincoln and Martin Luther King, have shared a fundamental belief that humanly creative, positive law is morally good or bad, just or unjust, depending on its conformity to the standards of quote-unquote natural vis-a-vis moral law, that is, no mere human creation. The natural law is thus a higher law, albeit a law that is a principle accessible to the human reason and dependent on, though entirely compatible with and indeed illuminated by, divine revelation. St. Paul, for example, refers to a law written on the heart, which informs the conscience of even the Gentiles who do not have the revealed law of Moses to guide them. Many centuries later, Thomas Jefferson appeals to the laws of nature and nature's God in justifying the American Revolution. The most modern commentators agree that the American founders were firm believers in the laws of nature and nature's God, or what we call today natural law, and sought to craft a constitution that would conform to its requirements as they understood them and embodied its basic principles for the design of a just political order. The framers of the Constitution sought to create institutions and procedures that would afford respect and protection to those basic rights, or what we refer to as natural rights or inalienable rights, rights given to us by God, our Creator, that people possess not as privileges or opportunities granted by the state, but as principles of natural law, which is the moral duty of the state to respect and protect. Throughout the 20th century, however, a live debate has existed regarding the question of whether the Constitution incorporates natural law in such a way as to make it a source of judicially enforceable, albeit unwritten, constitutional and other forms of guarantees by the civil law and code. Those few that believe that it is not, or those few who think that it is, may not understand the Constitution. What I am trying to convey is that the Constitution is not something that wraps itself around the guarantees of rights. We have a Bill of Rights that are amendments to the Constitution, but they're actually nothing regarding the Constitution itself. They are just added further declaratory reservations on rights that the government cannot touch. If you really look at the Bill of Rights, it really has nothing to do with the Constitution. They're just a further guarantee that the government cannot meddle with any of these things, and these very specific things are to be protected from government. The Constitution itself only delegates very specific roles, responsibilities, powers, and properties to government. In other words, those are the only things they can possess, operate, exercise, and meddle with. If it's not a role, responsibility, power, or property formally delegated within that Constitution, it must be delegated via an amendment before what they do is constitutional. If they exercise any role, responsibility, power, or possess any property that is not within that enumerated Constitution and is not within an amendment to the Constitution, then what they are exerting in these roles, responsibilities, properties, and powers is strictly usurpation and tyranny. So in other words, they are exceeding and encroaching upon those barriers of the Constitution and breaching it. And we have a moral obligation and a responsibility to hold them accountable. Our legal culture has lost the context in which the Constitution was written. I speak of the natural law, or the laws of nature and nature's God, the idea of laws founded upon reason and logic and not merely by ipse dixit and dogmatic and unproven statements, or of a given power. Today, I tell you what, today we are ran to and fro over these dogmatic and unproven statements. I mean, look at what Gore and all of these people are doing regarding climate change. This has a profound implication for the modern interpretation of the Constitution. This is why you hear me go on and on over going after people who use dogma or demagoguery that, you know, claim that this is going to happen. We need to hold them accountable, especially if they're a public servant. Once you've stepped into the ring as a public servant, everything you say, you cannot use demagoguery or any of this type of dogma to actually present and project these ideas of destruction, to use fear to actually start controlling the masses and to getting the people to behave a specific way. That is irresponsible, and it's an exercise of unconstitutional powers. Every public servant must be constrained by the Constitution and operate within the Constitution. There is no time for subjection. There is no time to be able to, you know, incur these concepts of theories of global change and climate change and blah, blah, blah. You know, all of this crap, you know, the social injustice, or social justice and injustice, reparations, all of these types of things that are not within the Constitution, and any politician that is pandering to the audiences that are demanding these types of things, they need to be removed because they have taken their position into one of trying to be an apostle or trying to be a false prophet. Or false apostle, I mean. So to demonstrate this, let me give a clear example of the incompatibility of the modern perspective of laws of notions with the ideas of the founders. When the Constitution was drafted, it did not contain any Bill of Rights and had no explicit protection of freedom of speech. What was delegated in the Constitution was what they could do. If it wasn't listed, they couldn't touch it. To the legal positive, without any explicit protection for the freedom of speech, the government could regulate speech, yet none of the founders actually believed this because it was not within the Constitution. When the idea of a Bill of Rights is proposed, the objection was that the Bill of Rights was unnecessary, and these rights were also protected. And you can see Federalist Number 84, as well as the ratification debates that talk about this. Instead of any enumeration of rights already protected was seen as dangerous. If we say we have rights 1 to 100, that implies that we don't have rights of 101 and beyond. So the enumeration of rights would limit the rights already protected. This problem was eventually solved by James Madison by explicitly rejecting the idea that the rights already projected were limited by the enumeration of the Bill of Rights in the Ninth Amendment. The only conclusion was that it could be drawn from that was even before the Bill of Rights, the people believed they already had the freedom of speech, which was true. We'll be right back after this promo. Thank you so much.
To set the record straight, Republic Review is neither an Article 5 convention nor a convention of states. In accordance with Article 5 of the Constitution, this convention requires 2/3 of the states to apply to Congress to convene a convention with the intent to amend the Constitution. This convention is unable to solve our real problem, which is non-compliance to the Constitution, and would be dangerous to convene at this time. In contrast, Republic Review is the process of the states exerting its constitutional authority over the Constitution. An audit does not require an application to Congress. This authority is inherent to principal stakeholders of a contract. Why do we need Republic Review? Because this is the only way the states can deal with the federal encroachments into roles, responsibilities, and powers that belong to the states. To learn more about Republic Review, please go to reclaimingtherepublic.org to read my content and my model on the audit and Republic Review process. As a reminder, if you have any questions or comments, we have a 24-hour comment line, 425-270-5416.
As I stated prior to, you know, this show and throughout the past few years going through the ratification debates, if the Constitution does not have it listed and delegated as a role, responsibility, power, or property, the general government cannot meddle with it. Which is why freedom of speech, freedom of religion, freedom of travel, all of these types of things that are not delegated to the government were kept from them. That all these powers that were not, all grants that were not delegated within that Constitution reserved to the states and the people, period. However, there were so many people that felt that we needed to have an additional declaration or declaratory, declaratory statements that clarified that the government could not operate or could not meddle with any of these things. More specifically, any of the things that weren't delegated. In other words, it's a power of attorney. It is a limited, as a matter of fact, they even use the term power of attorney. I am surprised when I read so many different people's materials, when I pull together these concepts on natural law, and I could reference the people that I'm using in, you know, trying to create this amalgamation of the perspectives of natural law, that these people, even these people today, don't get it. They don't understand that the compact, the Constitution, is just like a limited power of attorney, a limited, specified, and defined power of attorney. Now, you know, one purveyor of thought, and as a matter of fact, I'll give you the guy's name, David Watkins. I don't know who he is. I think he's kind of a legal analyst of, you know, laws and so forth in society. And he says this, that there are two reasonable originalist arguments that would prevent the freedom of speech without the First Amendment. The first interprets the meaning of the word law as used in the Constitution before the Bill of Rights. The second incorporates the common law of agency and contract to limit the proper scope of the delegated power. It's likely that both of these are valid and reinforce each other. See, this is what this guy thinks. No, he if it's not delegated within the Constitution, it's not permitted. It's, you know, so he's talking about the fact that the Bill of Rights puts this, they cannot make any law. Well, hold on here. Remember what the Bill of Rights is. So the Bill of Rights is not a part of, you know, creating an enumeration of rights. It is only a small portion of the Constitution that simply serves as declaratory reservations that the federal government cannot meddle whatsoever with any of these things from the First to the Second to the Tenth Amendment. Now, there are a couple of amendments, such as the, you know, the pay, which becomes the 27th Amendment, and the First Amendment, which is over the apportionment and that. Those are different amendments, but the First Amendment, the Second Amendment, all the way to the Tenth Amendment, those are basically stating the obvious. Do you really need to say those things that aren't within? So look at a power of attorney and look at the Constitution as a power of attorney. Do you really need the Tenth Amendment to say powers not granted are reserved? No, you don't need to say that. But that's exactly what the Federalists kept on saying. And that's what these guys, these legal minds that I run into, you know, they constantly keep on yammering that, you know, there's these nuances and there's not. It's really that simple. If it's not delegated, they can't do it. Now, I'll go on to what this Mr. Watkins says. It's likely that both of these are valid and reinforce each other. These also require an understanding of the Lockean notions of rights and liberty and the just powers of government as commonly understood at the founding. The founders distinguished between law, which is the use of government power in the service of a rational general principle or public principle, and mere will, which was arbitrary political power. The distinction, of course, requires an understanding of the Lockean idea of rights and liberty to determine what are the rational objectives that government is instituted to protect. See, the framers learned from Locke. The framers learned from Montesquieu. They learned from Bacon. They learned from all of these brilliant minds going all the way back to Cicero and even beyond. And I am here to tell you folks that they, learning from all of these great thinkers, even Hobbes, as wrong as Hobbes was, they learned from all of these guys to see, you know, the strength in their arguments and the huge weaknesses in some. And so as they went forward, not Jefferson. I'm sorry, Jefferson was not at the Constitutional Convention. And this was the only point in time. The only point in time where there was this cerebral, you know, serenity over this nation. I mean, even though people were dying in Philadelphia from, you know, yellow fever or what have you, it was a common occurrence. We weren't under, you know, under the duress of a war, you know, under the thought of maybe the British would come over the hill. We had this pause. And we saw the storm coming with the Shay Rebellion and everything else. We saw the storm coming. Or I should say Madison and those there saw the storm coming. And Benjamin Franklin urged the body of the whole of the delegates at the convention for the Constitution to beseech and beg the Lord. I mean, he said, if a sparrow could fall from the sky and he not notice, how can we imagine that we can build a nation without his help? Should we not at least implore upon him to help us? You know, and I'm paraphrasing, but bottom line, they all went and on a regular basis, they prayed and they prayed together. And then they came back and put aside their differences of religion. They put aside their self-interest, and they actually pulled up their sleeves and they worked and created a government that was inspired by our Creator. And that government gave them, you know, this, I'll say, things that they couldn't even fathom. As they started looking at this government, they were just absolutely, you know, going, wow, this is pretty good. But many of them felt, it's not perfect. I'll tell you what, it was closer to perfect than those guys even imagined. The things that were problematic, and you've heard me say this, the maintaining of slavery. There were a few things, that, especially slavery, that was problematic. They didn't see or understand the importance at that point in time. And the need for making constraints on the states was brilliant. But we've finally gotten to a point where I believe some of these things are worth examining. And that's really what we need to start doing. We need to start having these conversations so that we can go forward. Now, I could read a lot more, but I only have a couple of minutes, and I'm not going to finish this. But what I will do is tomorrow I kind of have a writing in my own words about natural law and the laws of nature and nature's God, and how governments, or I should say how these concepts evolved, and how we moved forward into creating a government that absolutely folded in the laws of nature and nature's God without folding them in directly. And we did that by creating a purely and clearly defined and limited government. In other words, you know, it's you can change it. You can change it all you want, but there's only one way to change it. And it's not through politics from the Republicans and Democrats to get along and say, okay, we're going to create this bill. And, you know, the fact is, how come a long, long time ago, Republicans just didn't stand up when the Democrats first started pulling these shenanigans to say, we can't do this? Why? Because I believe they were co-opted already, because I believe they were already corrupted. And so that's why they had to go along, or they would have been outed. And I can tell you the corruption has been long running in our government. Now, one thing I want to say, because we've talked about it before, is Joe McCarthy. Joe McCarthy must not have had, they must not have had any pictures on Joe McCarthy, because I'm telling you, if they did, they would have exposed him. And I believe that because information and technology, I mean, you can't get away with crap today. As a matter of fact, if you ever see some of these things, like you see people in situations where they actually die and there was plenty of time for somebody to actually save that person. But instead, everybody was too busy putting their phones onto video so that they could capture this person's death. I mean, this is an indictment of how far we've gone, but this is also a testament to how we live at a time where anything and everything can be captured. Anything and everything can be brought forth with truth. I mean, we've actually seen situations where we've caught law enforcement doing bad things, or we've caught people doing bad things. We now have, and we live in a world of empirical data and evidence, to where we make it very, very hard, if we have access to all of the data and evidence, to make a mistake. It's very hard. But the problem is that those who control don't want all of the evidence and all of the information unless it supports their narrative out. And so this is how we're living, because it is a corrupt society. But when we come back in our next episode, we'll get back into the laws of nature and nature's God, or what many people call today natural law. I'm G.R. Mobley. We're Reclaiming the Republic, and we need your help. God bless.
The reason progressives are effective in instituting their policies is because they are united ideologically, financially, and socially. In addition, almost every billionaire in the world is funding a vast array of different groups, and these groups' efforts are to undermine our republic and our constitution. If you don't believe me, just Google donors to the Open Society Foundations. The only way we're going to successfully combat these efforts and take back our liberties, like our education system, healthcare, state lands, housing, labor, and many other roles, responsibilities,
responsibilities and powers that belong to the states is by you and I and local businesses getting involved in supporting political programs and efforts based on constitutional principles. The best way to do this is supporting result-oriented organizations designed to take back our lost liberties. The ultimate result-oriented effort is Republic Review, so please consider contributing to the show and the organizations and activities that we are supporting by going to ReclaimingTheRepublic.org and go to the contributions page, and you can become a listed supporter of liberty.